Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, January 13th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, folks from Mudrooms will be here to tell us about Wednesday night's event. We'll hear about the Platypus Game Connection. We'll learn more about Mentoring Month with Big Brothers and Big Sisters. And Sam Bornstein will be here to tell us about creating a makerspace in Juno. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new report concludes that Canadian police have failed to protect Aboriginal women and girls from murder and violence. It's the latest call for a public investigation into the cases of hundreds of murdered and missing Aboriginal women. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
The Human Rights Wing of the Organization of American States says there are many social and economic issues to address to stop the violence against Indigenous women. The organization looked into the handling of missing and murdered Aboriginal women in British Columbia. What it found was part of a wider pattern of violence and discrimination across the country. The report is being welcomed by Aboriginal groups in Canada. Dawn Harvard is the vice president of the Native Women's Association.
This report is the first in-depth examination of the murders and disappearances by an expert international human rights body. These women and girls are being stolen from our families, from our communities, and it is time that somebody is taking this seriously.
The report doesn't call for an inquiry, but does call for a more coordinated response or action plan to address why Aboriginal women face higher risks of violence. Aboriginal women in Canada are murdered or disappear at a rate four times higher than in the rest of the population. Police estimate that more than 1,100 have been missing or murdered since 1980. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Last week's Nebraska Supreme Court decision paves the way for the state's governor to approve the Keystone Pipeline across his state. More litigation is likely pending over the project, but even if the pipeline gets the approval in Nebraska, it still faces hurdles in South Dakota. Tribal governments across the state have passed resolutions against the pipeline, and tribal officials are lining up in opposition at upcoming state regulatory hearings. Charles Michael Ray reports.
For the pipeline to go through, it must have permits in all the states it crosses and the approval of President Obama. South Dakota is now the last state on the pipeline route without official approval. The State Public Utilities Commission earlier granted a pipeline permit, but after 4 years it expired. Now the issue is up before the commission again. Pipeline opponents, like the Rosebud Sioux Tribe, now see South Dakota as a final battleground in the process. Matt Rappold is an attorney for the tribe.
At this point, the Rosebud Sioux Tribe is disappointed with the result from the Nebraska Supreme Court. We will remain steadfast in our determination to oppose TransCanada and the Keystone XL pipeline in front of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission.
But those backing the Keystone pipeline championed the outcome of the issue before the Nebraska Supreme Court and called on President Obama to approve the project. Pipeline backers say Keystone XL can provide economic benefits without harming the environment. The next meeting of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission on the Keystone Pipeline is scheduled in May. During this time, both TransCanada officials and opponents of the pipeline, including some 40 interveners, will present their cases. Any final PUC decision could then potentially be challenged in court. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The leader of a South Dakota tribe is denying allegations released in a Human Rights Watch report Monday. The Argus Leader reports, Lower Brule Sioux Tribal Chair Michael John Drew says the report is full of errors and misrepresentations. The report alleges more than $20 million in funds meant for essential services were diverted and unaccounted for between 2007 and 2013. For more about the report, visit our archive audio from Monday's newscast on our website, nativenews.net. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Gathering of Nations to the UNM Pitt, April 24th. Information on services and the Gathering of Nations at ahcnm.org.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, January 13th, 2015. It's about 6.5 minutes after the hour, and in the studio now is Tom Cosgrove and Bill Hansen, the Mudrooms crew.
Hey,
how
Scott.
Are you guys?
How are you doing?
Part of the Mudrooms crew.
Yeah, part of us.
Tom, you're on the board, is that right?
That is correct. Have been since the get-go, so it's been a great experience. We're in our fourth season, and last time we got more people than we ever had. I'm not quite sure, but we were approaching 250 people. Pretty big numbers for a weekday event in Juneau.
Absolutely, and it looks so great when Northern Light is just filled with people, and it's such a cozy atmosphere, such a nice place for this event to happen. Yeah. So Wednesday at 7 p.m., is
Wednesday,
that correct?
Wednesday, 7 p.m., that's correct. Show up early, please, because we start on time, and now that we've got a crunch, you don't want to be sitting in the very back.
Bill Hansen, will this be your second time?
Yes, this is my second time, yeah.
So you must enjoy it.
I love mudrooms. I like talking, but I really like listening. I don't go to every one of them, but for me it's been a really good experience because it's a place where people tell stories about themselves and their families or personal. They relate personal things that are really if you were just one on one with people. You wouldn't really learn these things until you're a close friend, I think, in a lot of cases, or at least a friend who they trusted. So there's a trust relationship between the people who speak and all the people in the audience, and people do provide really personal stories. So you get a chance to meet somebody, even though it's a little pinpoint in their life.
And in case there's someone out there who doesn't know what Mudrooms is, storytelling event, 7 minutes.
Okay, I'll give you the quick spiel. You ready?
Yes.
Okay, Mudrooms. It's real stories by real people. Seven people, 7 minutes, seven stories. So each month has a theme. This month it's rearview mirror. And when we say a theme, it can be loosely interpreted, and I mean loosely. What that means to one person doesn't mean to another. It's more of a way to create a story idea than anything else. The other thing is that everything is charity. We've got Mudrooms is an organization. We call ourselves an unorganization. We have no structure. All the money that you pay $7 to get in, it immediately goes to charity. Our charity, for the next several months is AWARE. The people from AWARE collect the money. We pay out the expenses to rent the church and our publicity expenses. All the rest goes to charity. And we've raised almost $25,000 in our four years.
That's great. Bill, I thought among the interesting things that you said was that Mudrooms takes down barriers between people. And I think sometimes in Juneau it can take a while to get to know somebody. So many people come and go, and those of us that have been here for a while, we tend to say, oh, are you going to be here for a while? I don't know. Am I going to be your friend? I don't know. But it sounds like in Mudrooms this happens right away. How would you explain that?
I think that I think it helps that it's been going for a while. So a lot of people have been in the audience a lot, and they understand what it's about. So I think that it helps in that sense. I can't explain it completely. I think it's partly just the atmosphere and the way it's set up. I think it's that you see a number of people actually trusting other people and talking, and so you become more aware and more willing to do that.
Yeah, and both of you guys have lived in Juneau for a long time. Is this program Mudrooms, is this changing the way we communicate with each other? and get to know people?
I think it changes it in this way. The room is full of people who are completely a very diverse group of people. And sure, your friends are there and there are other people there, but you meet a lot of people you've never met before. And every time I go, there are many people I don't know there that I haven't seen before. So I think that it breaks down that barrier of just introducing people to each other. And as far as being unusual in Juneau, I think that in Juneau, people are open, but you still need that introduction. You still need that premise of trust.
One of the things that we've seen is that if you go to certain music events in this town, everyone in the audience has got gray hair. Then we have certain music events where there's hardly anyone over 30. You get the 20-somethings to the 60, 70-year-olds in the same room, all of which are tuned into these stories, and it's really powerful from that point of view. Why now? One of the things that's going on nationwide is that there are these storytelling events. The Moth, which originated out of New York City, Second Story out of Chicago. People are tuned into this. Now, whether it's the fact that we are now in this electronic age and we no longer take the time to tell our stories and this is an avenue to do it, I'm not sure, but it is happening nationwide. What's happening here is also happening other places.
And if you want to see this in person, you can do that this Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. Who are some of the speakers or the storytellers?
Well, let's see. We've got seven of them. Iris Benson, K.J. Metcalf, Julie Sinclair, Ryan Johnson, Kristen Stouter, Kanan Bosler, and Bill Hansen, who's sitting right here. We also have music before and during break. Cousin Curtis is there, and this is my plug, we are still looking for some speakers. We got an opening for a speaker for March, and that theme is Brush with the Law. And I know that there is a listener out there that has that story that they don't always share, but is one that probably needs to be shared about Brush with the Law.
And if somebody wanted to get in contact with you, if they wanted to tell a story, probably go to mudrooms.org.
That's exactly right.
Or come see you on Wednesday
night.
Yeah,
please come. We're there. The show is at 7, but we get there early and be glad to talk to whoever is interested.
And it's there at Northern Light United Church in the Federal Flats?
That's correct, and that is 9th and B.
Yeah. Bill, would you mind giving us just a quick teaser about the story you're going to tell?
I'm going to talk about, this is going to be a fun one for me. It's how I learned to travel and internationally and some of the mistakes I made on my first trip and how somebody I was with fixed them. So,
yeah, don't want to give away too much, Bill. We want those people out there. I think one of the other things that I want to say, I just had a recent experience about, we're talking about connectivity. And this is just not about Juneau. One of the stories we had last year was by Mark Stofa, who talked about his experience with in the Peace Corps in Sierra Leone. Mm-hmm. And he shared a story that was extremely powerful about how his village survived a very bloody civil war. Just last month, I saw him at Mudrooms. I said, you know, we should probably check back in because, you know, your village, all the Ebola stuff's going on. And he said, thankfully, my village is far remote, they haven't been touched. And so I just followed up with him. And in fact, in that short month, three of the main people in the village had died of Ebola. It is now quarantined. Mm. And one of the things for me is that I now am emotionally tied with people in Sierra Leone strictly through the story of someone that I heard at Mudrooms. And to me, that is, you know, is what is important about this, because I now have a connection and an empathy with people I've never met strictly through the story of someone who felt that and has now transferred that to me.
Thanks for sharing that, Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, this is tomorrow night, Wednesday night at 7 p.m., connectivity, storytelling, empathy,
and if
community.
You haven't been, come, because it's a remarkable experience. So please come, and please come early.
All right, gentlemen, anything else?
I think that does it.
All right, here's some Cousin Curtis.
Mm-hmm. Surely you didn't see me, as I was higher up and dreaming of a day that I'd come and sweep you off your feet. I'd take a chance and glance a glance, nothing short of cheap romance is all that I have in store for you. 'Cause I'm a hopeless lover waiting for the cover of your blanket. I'm a ragged champion crumbling, but my eyes are only for you. And if you would trade a smile, I'll come to you from any mile. Just like a bee to something sweeter than honey, I got a lot to offer you and none of it's money. Won't you love me as I am? Oh, won't you love me as I am? Oh, won't you love me as I am? Oh, won't you love me as I am? As I am. You need it, what I need you can give. All of that is just superfluous. I may not be much on the outside, but I can teach you to live. All that I ask of you is that you love me as I am. A hopeless lover waiting for the cover of your blanket. I'm a ragged champion crumbling, but my eyes are only for you. And if you would trade a smile, I'll come to you from any mile. Just like a bee to something sweeter than honey, I got lots to offer you and none of it's money. Won't you love me as I am? Oh, won't you love me as I am? Oh, won't you love me as I am? Oh, won't you love me as I am? As I am.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, January 13th. It's about 20 minutes past the hour, and in the studio is Josh Warren of the Platypus Nonprofit Board and Game organization. Did I get that right, Josh?
The convention that we're holding in 2 weekends.
Yeah, so you're going to be having the Platypus Game Convention Board and Card Game Extravaganza. It's going to be at the Jack on January 23rd, 24th, and 25th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Tell us what people can expect to see there.
Except for the first hour of each day, we're going to have game demonstrations by people who know and have played the games well. So if you are afraid of coming because you don't know a game, we have about 60 games that we'll be able to teach people to play over the course of the weekend. A large part of the facility will be open for anyone to grab a table and play a game. We have a board game library of over 300 titles that you can just check out and take and find some friends to play games with, as well as two tournaments, one on Saturday and one on Sunday.
Okay. Josh, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're born and raised Juneau, and how did you formed Platypus at some state? Tell us more.
So as you mentioned, I was born and raised in Juneau. I've always wanted to go to a large board and game convention, and I've been to a couple of conventions down south. But in the end, you wind up spending $1,000+ just to go to one. And I felt that there was a strong enough community of board gamers in Juneau to have our own, where it will only cost a small amount of money to come instead of a couple thousand. So this last, in 2014, me and some of my friends formed Platypus Gaming, and we're working on bringing that convention experience to Juneau.
Okay, and we were talking a little bit before the interview, and you said it may someday grow into electronic gaming with Xboxes and such, but right now it is just board and card games for the most part?
There's a lot of, not everyone who plays board games plays electronic games, but there's still a lot of crossover between those two demographics. So I could see if it became really popular, it could expand to a somewhat larger venue and encompass both. But I still think that board and card will always be the core spirit of our organization.
And what are some of the most popular board games and card games within your organization?
Some of us have grown tired of it, but the game that most people really enjoy that I've heard from board and card games is Settlers of Catan, and that's going to be our tournament on Sunday. There's one of the things we're really trying to provide is not only some beginner games that people can come right into, Settlers being one of those, and Ticket to Ride, but we also have a lot of games that have just now come out, Castles of Mad King Ludwig, Cult Express, things like that. So we're going to have games for experienced players as well as new players.
Any classics?
We will have the classics because I've had them in the past. We will have Risk. We will have Monopoly if people choose. We won't have demonstrations of those games, but they will be there for people to play, and we'll definitely have a lot of decks of cards if people just want to break out some hearts or spades or something like that.
Josh, what is it that you like about gaming?
I really like the social aspect while you're also using your mind to try to solve the puzzle. There are some games that are very puzzling. You're trying to solve them, but at the same time, you're still interacting, and then there's the games that are more of a party style, and you really just get to have a lot of fun with your friends with low stress.
Okay. So again, this is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 23rd, 24th, and 25th at the Jack. Age, minimum age?
The kid pass is for 14 and under, and the only thing we ask is if you wind up with a kid pass that you need to have some supervision there. But we don't have any minimum age. We just ask for supervision under 14. And we have a lot of games. We've expanded our catalog to include a lot of games for younger players so they can have some fun, too.
Okay. And the cost to get in?
For the entire weekend, it's going to be $25. For just one of the 3 days, it's $15. And then the kids under 14 is $10 straight across for a three-day ticket.
And this all, you're Platypus is a nonprofit, right?
Yeah, we registered with the IRS as a nonprofit. So all the proceeds, all the things we're selling some games, and we're also giving some games away over the convention. All those were donated. So all the proceeds are just going to go to making it a better experience next year.
All right. And it's Friday at 6 p.m. to 2 a.m.?
Yep.
Is that right? Saturday, 9 a.m. to 2 a.m.? Wait.
Yeah, so 9 a.m. Going all the way into the evening and through 2 a.m. So we have, if you're an early bird and want to play a game, you can come at 9. I might not be there yet. I'm more of a night owl, so I'll be there till 2 a.m. Both nights that we go that late.
And how about on Sunday?
9 a.m. to 6 p.m.
If somebody wants to get more information about this, where should they go?
We have our own website, platypusgaming.org, or if you just want to shoot us an email, we're at platypusboardgaming@gmail.com.
All right, Josh Warren, are you the executive director?
I am the president, yes.
And president of Platypus Game. What's the name of the nonprofit again?
Platypus Gaming.
All right. If you want more information, find them on the web or on Facebook. Anything else you want to add, Josh?
I hope people come. And the first 100 also, we have commemorative dice for the first 100 who come in. So I look forward to seeing everyone there.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 13th of January, 2015. It's the birthday of Laurie Moore, the novelist, short story writer, born in Glens Falls, New York, 1957. She said of her childhood, there was acting and dressing up. We'd play music and write crappy songs. We'd draw and paint and fancy ourselves as artistic. It was part of being a girl in the 60s that you were creative. went to college, graduate school, wrote the stories that became her first book, Self-Help, in 1985. Looking back, Lori Moore said that the book had too many birds and moons and space aliens and struggling artists of every stripe, as well as much illness and divorce and other sad facts of family and romantic life. But the book got great reviews, and she's written more books, short stories, novels, Who Will Run the Frog Hospital, Birds of America, and her most recent novel, A Gate at the Stairs, which begins, "The cold came late that fall, and the songbirds were caught off guard. By the time the snow and wind began in earnest, too many had been suckered into staying, and instead of flying south, instead of already having flown south, they were huddled in people's yards, their feathers puffed for some modicum of warmth. I was looking for a job, I was a student, and needed babysitting work, and so I would walk from interview to interview in these attractive but wintry neighborhoods, the eerie multitudes of robins pecking at the frozen ground, dun gray and stricken." And it's the birthday of the dime novelist Horatio Alger, Jr., born Chelsea, Massachusetts, 1832. Horatio Alger was a minister who was forced to resign after he was accused of having sexual relationships with boys in his congregation. And he went on to gain great fame and fortune writing rags-to-riches novels, more than 500 of them, all about young, virtuous street urchins who saved up their money and then did something impressive that attracted the attention of rich older men who became their benefactors. Here's a poem for today by Faith Sheeran entitled Geese. "A gaggle of geese return to our street each winter while migrating from one place to another. They arrive in January around my husband's birthday, and I'm surprised to find them behind our house, honking like cab drivers in traffic. Most leave with babies, but one pair can't manage to have any. I've watched them sit for years on a wet nest of death, warming unhappiness. It's only when the other geese swim past them, proudly displaying a line of live chicks, that they realize they have failed again, their eggs silent beneath the love of their feathers. My neighbors and I don't agree on much, but we all watch these geese from our windows with binoculars, sometimes our breakfast growing cold on the table. We wish the unsuccessful ones would have a season of luck, their eggs healthy and well-placed, for each of us has known the pleasure of spring, the way it feels for something closed to open, the soft, heavenly weather of arrival." A poem by Faith Sheeran, Geese, from Moving the Piano, published by Stephen F. Austin State University Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Cabot Creamery Cooperative, Northeast farm families who make cheddar cheese and award volunteers for their commitment at rewardvolunteers.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 30 minutes after the hour. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, January 13th. Scott Burton, your host. And now in the studio are folks from Big Brothers and Big Sisters, Ildi Nyland and Torin Ulrichsen. Welcome, you two.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming in today. So it is indeed National Mentoring Month, and Big Brothers, Big Sisters is playing a big part in that here in Juno. Torin, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so we, National Mentoring Month is a nationwide month of honor, and Big Brothers Big Sisters really likes to get the word out about it to try to have those who were mentors or have had mentors in their life to acknowledge them in some way or to help increase support of current mentoring programs like Big Brothers Big Sisters to get more people to sign up or more people to contribute in other ways through financial donations or through donations of volunteered time.
All right, we'll talk about that in a second. But first, Ildi, you are the mom of a little.
That's correct, right? Yes.
And your son's name is Christopher, and he goes to Juno Douglas High School. When did Christopher get a big?
About 5 years ago, I realized that as he's growing up, I would like him to experience a little bit more than what I can give as a single mom. He's got two younger sisters. One of his sisters have a disability. So having a female teacher and female care providers and myself, he just didn't have the experiences I was hoping to expose him to. So we went to sign up for a big, and we were matched with Matthew Brown, and it has been a really great experience so far.
And so 5 years ago, you were saying Christopher was sort of between elementary and middle school?
Yes.
All right. What are some of the examples of things that Christopher and Matthew do together?
Well, one of the very first thing they did was painting a painting at canvas, and that prompted me to sign him up for painting lessons in town, and ever since now he's going to the Sitka Fine Arts Camp.
Wow.
He is becoming an artist. They also go ziplining, kayaking. Again, these are the things I wouldn't be able to take him to. They have been watching football, which I don't know much about, so that's exciting. I'm actually learning some things, too. Day hikes, just a lot of things that, you know, boys do. I also heard that Matt is volunteering to teach him how to drive. Yay.
Save your clutch.
Yes.
So, Torin, will you sort of describe the scope of your program here in Juneau?
Right. So we have four programs here in Juneau, which is different than other cities. We are very lucky to have our community-based program, which is what most people have heard about, which is the program that Christopher and Matt are in, and it's where a volunteer can pick up a little and take him out to do things in the community, like hiking or fishing or go to the gym, whatever the big likes to do. They just include a little along with that. There's the school-based program where the volunteer can go into the elementary school for 1 hour a week and kind of be a lunch buddy and have lunch with them and play on the playground. And then our two programs that are less well-known are our Johnson Youth Center program. So volunteers can actually go into the Johnson Youth Center, which is our local juvenile detention facility, and help those youth who are there in treatment, trying to turn their lives around and give them support and set them on the right path. And then also the SYNC program, which is matching foster care youth who are transitioning out of foster care. So it's the youth 16 and older who aren't going to get adopted into a family and who are going to age out on their own, and matching them up with a volunteer who can help guide them along that really difficult time in, I think, every person's life, that 16 to 20 age range. You need a little bit extra support.
And you were saying that you have about 40 littles waiting?
Correct. We have about 30 young men and boys and 10 girls. So we definitely like to encourage our big brothers and our males in the community to sign up. We also do couples matches, so it's where they don't have to be married, just a long-term committed relationship can do it together. Or if they're siblings, they can also be matched together. So it's where two people can get one little, and that's a good way to help get extra people signed up who maybe want someone else to help out with the commitment.
And I asked Joe this last week, but how would you describe someone who ends up being a successful big?
Anybody. We have bigs age range from 18 to we actually have a big who's 85. So anyone who has a little bit of extra time and the patience to be matched with a child is really all it takes. We have kids who fit every criteria.
Okay. Ildi, can you tell us another story about interaction between Christopher and Matthew?
Yes, I'd like to applaud Big Brothers Big Sisters for finding such a great match. I was hesitant to sign up first because I figured, what if it doesn't work out? What if it's not a good match? And they just nailed it. Matt and Christopher have the same temper, the same sense of humor. They like the same things. And really, it's Christopher has a lifetime friend, a mentor, a great role model. We couldn't be happier for that, him to have this in his life. And, you know, they pretty much meet every weekend for whatever they decide. They talk about it. They text back and forth. Matt always includes me in these conversations. I can see Christopher blossoming in this experience. Just a very fun time.
Well, that's great to hear. And I know that definitely Big Brothers Big Sisters needs bigs right now. But Ildi, what would be your advice to fellow parents out there to get their kids involved with Big Brothers Big Sisters?
I would just say don't hesitate. Don't be afraid. You know, it is such a great program. I only see blessings in my family. And I don't think that I could give Christopher that time and that involvement. And him getting that, you know, it's going to be something that he will take for with him. And hopefully he's going to become a big brother one day.
It'd be awesome.
And speaking to both of you, how can we convince some of our listeners today to go in and become bigs?
So if they have any questions, any hesitations at all, it doesn't hurt to call us and just talk them through, and we can give you guys the answers. You can find us on our website. Just Google Big Brothers Big Sisters Alaska, and we will pop up. Our phone number is 586-3350, and we have very, I like to say, pleasant staff who, again, are happy to answer any questions. If you have any hesitations, even if you're kind of thinking about it and you want a little bit more information, we are happy to talk to you.
And real quick, Torin, how would you describe the minimum involvement and sort of the maximum involvement for a big?
Yeah, so it's the school-based program is probably the easiest for most people. It's just 1 hour a week. You can do it on your lunch hour, so you just have lunch hour at a school for 1 day a week, which is pretty easy. For those who travel a lot and they're worried about missing that, that's not a problem. If you are retired and you're gone 3 months out of the year, we can put the match on hold for that time and restart it again as soon as you get back to town. So we're very flexible, and we will help work around anyone's schedule.
All right, Ildi.
Oh, I just want to say it doesn't take anything extra. It doesn't take extra money, extra time. But you have, if you have a big heart, you can do it. That's all it takes. Involve the little in your own activities, what you're already doing.
Perfect.
Ildi Nyland, Torin Ulrichsen, thank you both for your time today. If you have any questions about Big Brothers, Big Sisters, find them on the web or on Facebook. Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. The plains and the prairies, wide open spaces where the wind blows free, where there are few hills or elevated perches, where the rough-legged hawk goes hunting. When the air is still, it's inclined to rest, but as the wind picks up, the rough-legged hawk takes to the sky. It defies gravity, flying upwards with just enough force, hovering in midair with rapidly beating wings and lowered feet and tail, looking for its prey of lemmings, voles, and short-tailed mice that are active during the day. After breeding on Arctic cliffs and tundra hillsides in summer months, rough-legged hawks winter all across the northern hemisphere. Open country is their ideal territory, where the small rodents they depend on are usually so plentiful that the hawks have enough to eat. But the rodents are cyclic, with lower populations in some years, and in those winters, roughlegs may migrate farther and be more abundant in the lower 48. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation. Find us at birdnote.org.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD in Southeast communities through Pick, Click, Give. There are over 36 causes based in the Juneau-Douglas area alone, including KTOO Public Radio. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's about 20 minutes until the hour here on Tuesday, January 13th, 2015. And now in the studio is Sam Bornstein. And Sam is thinking about creating a makerspace here in Juno. Welcome to the studio, Sam.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. So I've been hearing rumors of makerspaces. Sam, can you tell our listeners exactly what one is?
Well, a makerspace is a community-organized and run shop space for anyone who wants to work on projects, whether it's art projects or fixing up old equipment. Just, you know, the general term is making stuff. And so makerspaces generally have maybe a machine shop, a metals shop, wood shop, electronics lab, computer lab, all those different sorts of tools that people don't have access to in their own homes necessarily, but would want access to pursue their own interests.
A community shop, sort of.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background and how you became interested in makerspaces.
Well, I became interested in college when I was part of a club in my school that it was a mechanical engineering group. We made battle bots, you know, fighting robots. We built a 3D printer and made quadcopters. And we did open up our own mini makerspace in the basement of our school. And so, you know, and then after I graduated, I came back home to Juno, and I want to try and help the community by starting up a space here.
And if this space was built, what would you do in that space?
Oh, man, what wouldn't I do? Yeah, you know, I really like 3D printing. I would be 3D printing every day. You know, I just got an Arduino board. I've been messing around with making little LEDs flash on that, and quadcopters are another thing that I enjoy making. So, you know, there's lots of different projects. Those are what I would be interested in. I've been talking to people around town who want to do, you know, crafts and do sewing or learn programming or all of these sorts of different sorts of projects that everyone has their own idea of what they want to do. And so hopefully we can find people and bring them together and have a space in town where everyone can pursue their own interests.
And at what point are you in the development of this idea?
Well, at the moment, we're looking for people who are interested. We're having our first planning meeting this Saturday at noon in the downtown public library in the large meeting room. So we're trying to spread the word, trying to get as many people who are interested to come in and help out. I've never really made a real full makerspace before, so I'm a bit lost as to some of the things that I'm doing, so I need as many people who have experience as we can find, and anyone who's just interested would be, you know, great help.
Yeah. And so then probably one of the next moves would be to think about a physical location, right?
Yeah, well, that's one of the first things we need to do is find spaces. So if anyone out there has a large enough garage space that they want to lend us, or we'll be looking for spaces for lease or for rent around town. You know, makerspaces can be and often are in very different environments. You can have a large shop space that's better for, you know, metalworking, or you could have an office space where you can do, you know, more arts and crafts kind of stuff.
All right. And have you heard stories about other makerspaces throughout the country and if they're working out or not?
Yeah. And I've visited a couple. There's one in Anchorage. So there's already one in Alaska. Unfortunately, we won't be the first. But that seems to be working out well. There's a few around the Seattle area. And there is one in Whitehorse, too. So there is precedent for makerspaces being able to be supported by a community of our size.
Absolutely. I like the idea, too, that you'll have artists, mechanics, and who knows who else
yeah.
Mixing, cross-pollinating ideas and offering each other their skills.
Yeah,
and
that's
tools.
One of the great things about Juno is we have so many artists and we have so many people here who have, you know, basic mechanics skills, too, because we're Alaskan and we have such a strong arts community. There's such a large mixture of do-it-yourself here.
Sam, in a perfect world, describe where this one would be and what it would look like. Use your imagination for a sec.
Oh, man. I don't know. At the moment, I'm just trying to get what I can take here. But, preferably want a large shop space or warehouse kind of space somewhere in the middle of town that's accessible to as many people as possible. And, we want to be able to offer different things. Maybe have, like, a nice computer lab where we can, teach programming and have, shop space for metals and woodworking. And then, more space for textiles and, large part of a maker space is the space part.
Sure, absolutely. And I suspect you would probably become a nonprofit and have volunteers help do scheduling and things like that?
Yeah. They can be run in a number of different ways. Probably the best way for Juno, at least, would be a nonprofit. Usually they're supported by membership fees, kind of like a gym membership where you maybe pay a monthly fee and then you can go in and work on projects as much as you want. A lot of other spaces have deals where you could instead work instead of paying a fee if that would work out better for you. I'm hoping that we can partner with organizations around town, maybe the schools or universities, to help pay our way here. Especially if the schools could help out, we could have free admittance to students. That would be great if we could get students in for free.
Sam, this sounds great. And you're going to have, will this be your first planning meeting this Saturday?
It's our first planning meeting. I have met with a few organizations around town before this, JEDC and Public Library and a few other organizations. And they were all really interested in this. They all want this to happen. And so we'll have definitely the support from local organizations here, but what we really need are the people who are going to be running it and planning it.
Okay, and it's easy to find you on Facebook. Remind me what the your title is on Facebook.
It's just Juno Makerspace. Yeah, we need to come up with a good name for Makerspace. I mean, the one in Whitehorse is called UConstruct, and it's got a good pun there. But we need a good Juno Makerspace. It works for now, but we'll have to come up with something better.
And what's the best way to contact you?
So the Facebook is it's a group called Juno Makerspace, and I think you need a Facebook account just to see it, which I didn't realize when I made the group. I've also been posting some information to the Juno subreddit. That's something anyone can view online. And then for contacting me directly, if you want more information, it's just my personal email at slbornstein@gmail.com.
All right. Anything else that you'd like to add, Sam?
That's it. I mean, I hope people come to the meeting on Saturday and get a large enough turnout. The sooner we can get a makerspace up and running in Juno.
Well, it sounds like a great idea, and thanks for your time and energy into this.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, Dave, want to see the Intergalactic Nemesis with me?
The inter what?
The Intergalactic Nemesis.
What's that?
A live-action graphic novel.
Live-action what?
An adventure story with giant projected comic book artwork and live voices, music, and sound effects.
Live sound effects?
I saw a little bit of it on Conan. It's hilarious.
The Intergalactic Nemesis?
The Intergalactic Nemesis.
How do we get tickets?
Tickets for the show on January 20th, 7 p.m. at the JDHS Auditorium at the Jack, Hearthside Books, Rainy Retreat, and online at jahc.org.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon today. Tomorrow, we'll find out about the giant puppet project with M.K. McNaughton, Patty Mitchell, Robert Lockheed, and Dan Paulnow. Jody Dixon will be here to highlight The Yoga Path, a new business in the Lemon Creek area. Erica McCormick will be here to talk about Saturday's fundraiser for children in Uganda. And Jeffrey Clow and Matt Lillard will highlight activities at Eagle Crest. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and More, Wednesday on a Juno Afternoon. Currently it's 43 degrees out at the airport. And let's take a look at the weather here. Tomorrow, Wednesday, rain, highs around 45. Southeast wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Wednesday night and Thursday, rain, lows around 38, highs around 42. Southeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. And Friday, rain likely, highs around 40. lows around 36. Stay tuned for All Things Considered here in a minute or so.